This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour, as we do in hour number two on this show. We'll also talk to Josh Alper, ProFootballTalk.com. You know, get some things going on in the NFL, the latest on Deshaun Watson's investigations. I don't know if you noticed, but the Saints and the Eagles made a trade of draft picks. We'll get the ramifications of that as the Saints now. There are eight teams that have two picks in the first round of this draft. I couldn't believe it. It's like that seems to be where some teams are willing to give up picks and others just willing to go, yeah, that's the way we still want to go. So we'll talk to Josh Alper about things that are going on in the NFL because, again, the NFL always making news. Again, Thursday, the Masters begins. Tiger Woods says he's going to compete. I'm going to miss Phil Mickelson a lot. I really wish Phil was in this field. I don't think Phil should be going to a lot of Champions events or regular PGA Tour events. If he wants to stay out of the spotlight for his comments on the Saudi Golf League, you know, you don't want to keep going week in and week out to new media and new personalities where it gets brought up all the time. But the Masters is a different place. He could have answered it once. That could have been it. He could have enjoyed the festivities of the week. I think the people there love him. I think the patrons love him. I think that the champion's dinner and all the things you get to do as a Masters champion, I would never, if I won the Masters, I would never take it for granted. I would always show up, unless, of course, I've had family emergency or something, but I always would show up to just enjoy the accomplishment of winning that tournament and what it means, right? Again, as I've said many times, nobody honors its history as an event more than the Masters. And I think to walk into the champion's locker room, to see your jacket in the locker, to take it out, to wear it on pretty much the whole week while you're doing, you know, shaking hands and meeting people and attending events for the past champions, I would never, ever, ever take that for granted. I would never, ever think to myself that, you know, I could just skip this year because tomorrow's not promised to anybody. But I think Phil could have been safe at Augusta National. I think, again, he would have answered some questions about it, of course, but I think that could have been done. And I think he could have just went out, played some golf at a course he absolutely loves, and then gone home. And that's it. And then he could go back into exile. The Masters has always been a place where golfers have returned to be able to just play, even if they're not playing in anything else. And I am going to miss Phil Mickelson in the field of 2022. All right, we'll continue along. Good, the bad, and the dumb. And don't forget, at 40 past the hour, Josh Alper will join us to talk things NFL. As we continue, it's hour number two on Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, the dumb, Wednesday edition. Doesn't matter what edition it is, it's always the good, the bad, and the dumb. But I just bring up Wednesday because that's the day of the week. What's the good of the day?
The good of the day? Sean Weiss.
Sean Weiss, okay.
Does that name sound familiar to you?
I thought you were going to say Sean White.
No.
Sean Weiss.
Sean okay. Weiss, I don't know, maybe the W sounds
is
like a B.
Is he a Backstreet Boy?
No.
All right,
but he was a child star.
Was he?
He was Goldberg from the Mighty Ducks series.
Oh, okay.
We had brought him up maybe 2 years ago now when he was really down on his luck. You know, getting arrested for drugs and this and that, living on the streets and just looking very, very much in shambles.
But that Mighty Duck money wasn't good enough?
Yeah, Mighty Duck money was, you know, was probably too good.
Maybe it was too good, is right.
He entered rehab in 2020, and the reason why he's in the good of the day is because he has scored his first major acting role in God knows how long. And he will be starring in a new movie. I don't think it's a major movie.
But it's a step in the right
direction.
Good for
correct.
Him. Now, is this one of those John Travolta, Quentin Tarantino things?
Only time will tell, Tony. Right. I don't know.
John Travolta was doing Look Who's Talking To, and Quentin Tarantino was like, that's too big of a star to be doing these crappy movies.
Yeah.
Come on over here.
I don't
do
know
Pulp
if
Fiction
it's that.
With me and take off.
The movie sounds very artsy. It's called Jesus Revolution.
Oh, okay.
And he'll
maybe,
be
gets up for an Academy Award for this.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Wouldn't that be great?
He's playing a strung out, so I guess he's maybe basing it off of experiences that he may have had, but he's playing a strung out Vietnam vet who turns his life around.
Oh, okay.
After being baptized by self-avowed prophet Lonnie Frisbee.
Oh, okay, very cool. Okay, so this is more like if they came up to me and said, we need an overweight talk show host to talk sports for a living. Can you play this role? And I'm like, yeah.
I think maybe.
They saw him on the street and went, you know what? Funny that you are here. We have the role for you. Man, these Hollywood comeback stories are pretty amazing, though, aren't they?
It is.
Like, sometimes you hear these stories of, like, I don't know, it's like Margot Kidder. Remember, she was dealing with some things, and then all of a sudden she, like, found a couple of roles, like, on Big Bang Theory and some other places or whatever shows she found a role on, and then you're like, wow, that turned out really well for her. Like, she found a second like, burst of popularity.
Well, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, our favorite guys we've talked about all the time, Jason Bateman.
Yeah,
that to me is the most remarkable one, I think, overall. I mean, Robert Downey Jr. as well. From a career standpoint, because, I mean, great child actor that virtually disappeared from the face of the planet.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden became one of those guys you saw in everything.
Yeah, because I want to know, what was the gap between Hogan's Family and...
Say, Hogan's Family was like late 80s, right?
Yeah, late 80s. So basically, he was on Silver Spoons. Then he did a show called It's Your Move for like one season, maybe a season and a half before it got canceled. Then he was on Valerie, and that was Valerie Harper's show. And then she left, and then they changed it to Hogan's Family. So it was like same show, different name.
Yeah.
But then there was a gap between that and like Arrested Development.
Yeah.
Where I don't know what he did.
I don't. I honestly don't know if he did anything.
Yeah, and then boom, he's off and running with Arrested Development, of course, which led to movies,
mm-hmm.
which he's great in. I like everything he's in.
Well, he has a.
And now Ozark's, the final season of Ozark is coming out later.
You
this
know,
month.
I will say this: that there is another movie coming out that he will star in.
Which
that
is?
You know, it's a remake. I don't know if it's a remake. It's Clue. You remember the movie Clue?
Oh, yeah.
You know, the board game Clue. So they're making a movie, again, Clue, based off that board game. But it stars him and Ryan Reynolds.
I gotcha.
And I think that's going to be funny.
Okay, very cool. You know what I never understood about the Clue game? This is a complete tangent.
Yeah, no, that's what we did.
I asked my wife this, and she was like, why do you think about these things? In the game of Clue, the object is to figure out who did it, what weapon, and where.
Right.
The who... Isn't the where and how it happened already determined once you know there has been a murdered body? I know. I'm overwhelming you. I know. But like when you say
it's
Mustard in the observatory with a gun, don't you think that they know it was a gun in the observatory once you know that we need to find the killer?
You're not overwhelming me. You're ruining a piece of my childhood.
I know. I'm kidding.
That's
you,
what
right?
it is. It's
like what? Like is it really like if I see a dead body? Is it really a choice between a gun and the candlestick?
Well, I mean, how do you
like,
know?
Gonna,
how do you know it was
go,
done in the
know,
library? What if
like
he was killed in the kitchen?
Head, but it could have been a candlestick.
Yeah, the lead pipe could make a bullet
right.
size hole
I
if you
guess.
Push it hard enough through.
I guess. You know.
God.
I guess
that's.
But by the way, I love Clue.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
By the way. And shout out to my father who did not listen to the show yesterday. But
what?
I know it was his birthday. My dad is the greatest Clue player of all time.
Is he?
Yeah, he's great at it.
He's clued in.
Yeah, he's played with the grandkids a million times, and he's brilliant at it.
And he beats them
and
all the time.
I stink because I'm lazy. I don't do the
well. No, because you're already like, hey guys, the dead body. We found it in the conservatory.
Yeah. By the way, Robert's sending me a message on Facebook. The Clue movie was very entertaining. Can they do it again? Yeah, I thought the Clue movie was good.
Yeah, it was.
It was a good movie. It was a good movie. You're right. And if Jason Bateman's involved in the remake, I will see it.
And Ryan Reynolds as
and
well.
And Ryan Reynolds, I'll definitely see it because he's funny too.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see the pair of. I don't know. Have those two been together in a movie?
All right, so this is back to Goldberg. Yeah, it's back to Goldberg. He's acting.
He's acting.
Congratulations.
He's made a full circle.
By the
almost.
Way, if this is the first time you've listened to The Good, the Bad, and the Dumb, this is what we do. We
this
take
is,
a topic
this is
and
how
we
it
go
rolls.
On like two tangents, and then boom, we're off to the next thing. So what's the bad of the day?
A peacock mass exodus.
Oh, I saw this. Oh, yeah. I saw this.
So for all you guys who spent all that money getting your St. Peter's Peacock gear because you're
Absolutely.
Like, hey, these guys are going to be the next Gonzaga. No.
No.
We all know, you know, we talked about it. We talked about it before their season even ended that Shaheen Holloway was going to, you know, was What was it said? It's the most unkept secret.
Yep, that's the price, most known that's the secret. Price of what you do. If you're one of these small schools and your coach leads you to an Elite Eight or even a Sweet 16, he is gone.
Gone. So we all know that he is leaving for Seton Hall. Now we have three players, three of their stars, three of their biggest names who entered the transfer portal. Darryl Banks and Matthew Lee, who were starters and catalysts for the big run. And unfortunately, Doug Edert is taking his stash somewhere else as well.
Yep, he's leaving too. This transfer portal, I'm all for it for the principle of it, but my God, it's just a mess.
It was an article that I read when I was reading this story, and I think they put it perfectly. It's college athletes free agency.
Yeah, it's totally.
And that's what it is. Because with NIL, these guys, I mean, especially someone like Doug Edert, who already has an NIL deal with Buffalo Wild Wings, why wouldn't he take his show on the road to a bigger school?
With all due respect to St. Peter's, I mean, if you're going to St. Peter's as a basketball player, and all things being equal, meaning I don't really care where I'm going to school. I'm like, if you love St. Peter's, stay at St. Peter's. But if it's basketball, and you just got a little bit of that taste of what another program could give you in terms of facilities, experience, et cetera, take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Right? I'm sorry, St. Peter's, playing in the MAC, it's fine until you can go somewhere else.
I'll tell you this. Doug Edert, he seems like a Duke guy. But Coach K's not going to be there.
John Shire is going to be there.
Yeah.
I don't know if Doug Edert could play at Duke.
I don't know. I'm just saying that there's that.
I mean, one little run in a tournament, you're going to be on the same stage as like every McDonald's All-American.
That's right. Come on.
Like,
bring the stash to Tobacco Road. Maybe North Carolina.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. But, you know,
maybe he helps
knows?
North Carolina get over that hump.
It could be. You never know. You're right. You never
but,
know.
But I mean, that's the thing, right?
I shouldn't be putting the dinosaur thinking into this now.
What if these three players go to Kentucky? What if Calipari's like,
wouldn't that be great?
You guys were terrible. I'm taking these guys.
Yeah. All right. You guys couldn't beat these guys. Now these guys are Wildcats.
And these guys are beating you again.
Yeah. That's good. That's a good one. That's a better one than Duke. I would love to see that. That would play out good.
Even if just one of them ended up there.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, like, I shouldn't dismiss these ideas. You never know.
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of times, you know, what happens? These guys, maybe their high school game wasn't good enough. Maybe they went too small of a high school and just didn't get the recognition.
See, I'm going to disagree with that.
Think so?
Yeah, because part of your job is to know, like, when you're on a recruiting job, like, you're part of your gig is recruiting. You know everything. You are so dialed in. You will find these kids everywhere. I'll give you a quick story real quick. When I was in minor league basketball, one of the things that we were trying to do as a league, we were trying to say, hey, guys, you want to get noticed? Play in the United States. Don't go overseas. If you want to get in the NBA, play here. Like, play in our league and grow your talent. And I remember a guy in our office said, listen, kid, he goes, if there's a guy hitting 15 three-pointers in Paraguay, we know where he is. And I'm like, really? Like, we're all connected. And that was like in 2000. And I always took that and like, yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me to think that Doug Edert, if he was a serious, I could play at Duke talent, that Duke would not. They found Trajan Langdon in Alaska.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's in New Jersey. He's in the media hotbed. If that kid was tearing up high school basketball in New Jersey, I absolutely guarantee you Mike Krzyzewski would have known about it. Like, he would have been like, we're going to New York to see this kid.
Well, then they just proved what hard work.
Yeah, he grew.
You know, what pulls off.
But, you know, sometimes these tournaments can vault you to the unbelievable next level.
Yep.
Just one run could magically change your life. Maybe that's the case. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
Dumb of the day is the Squid Game director.
Is he doing another one?
Well, he is doing a second season. He is heading back to South Korea now or, you know, recently to go and write the second season for Squid Games because Netflix gave him a whole bunch of money. But he's also coming out with another series. And I don't know if this is dumb, right? Okay. There's a part of me because Squid Game was so interesting that I probably would jump into this one. But the show is going to be called, or the movie, I'm not sure which it is, Killing Old People Club.
What? Well, is that the name of it?
Yeah. And it promises to be more violent than Squid Game.
I was watching Squid Game was one of those weird television watching experiences where I would watch it and it would just be it's just constant killing and I went, ugh. Why am I watching this? This
you
has
couldn't
gotta
turn
be
away.
Poison. I couldn't turn it off and I was like, this is so poisonous to the brain.
But, and what was weird was like I remember I watched two episodes and then I didn't go back to it for like a week and a half. Like I was like it was like I remember I watched two
That's
episodes.
Traumatic.
I watched two episodes and I walked around the rest of the day going, you know, just reevaluating my life at that point. Like, God, like what, you know, everything was like in a fog and a haze. It's like, I couldn't believe what I was watching.
I know it was really, really tough because like you would see these people trying to accomplish these tasks and then they fail and a guy would just stand over them and blow their head off. And then you were watching it and I kept going, why am I watching this?
Yeah.
But it was extremely entertaining.
It was.
Like, that was the flip side of
it. Well, because you're sitting there,
but it was so dark. You know, and
to bring it back to Clue, you were trying to figure out what was going on.
Right, right.
You know, what are we watching?
This?
What is this?
Why? How are these people here? Who's running this? Why are they running this? What exactly is going on?
Why is everyone wearing a hood?
Right, yeah. Who are the people behind the masks? Why, again, it was kind of two sides of a coin.
Yeah.
I remember going, this is
so
this
I don't
is dangerous. Like my brain was just getting eaten with these images and yet I could not escape the draw of the story behind what was going on.
Yeah, and this Nick show, I don't know what to make of it, but it's called Killing Old People Club.
Well, as I get into older age, I don't know if I want to dive into this.
Exactly.
Right? I don't need copycats.
Where's the cutoff
of
old people?
Yeah. Is Mr. Beast going to do a copy video on YouTube? Where he's like, I spent $62 million killing old people. We're not really killing them, but we're just doing stuff to them. Are we going to see that?
I know.
Oh, goodness gracious.
But yeah.
Oh, I love
so that's what we have to look forward to on Netflix.
All right. Well, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Josh Alper is going to join us. We'll talk football. Catch up with him and some of these offseason moves that still shaking a lot of us to the core. Like, how did this actually occur? Well, I'll talk to Josh Alper about that more as we continue on Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. Josh Alper, ProFootballTalk.com, is going to join us coming up in about 10 minutes. We'll get his thoughts on, again, some of the things that are going on this offseason. There's still Deshaun Watson stuff to dissect for the National Football League. Tyreek Hill will be playing for the Dolphins. The Saints and Eagles made a trade of draft picks. The Saints will have two picks. The Eagles waiting to get their two picks next season. So there's a lot to discuss still, again, as the NFL heads into the draft in a couple of weeks. I mean, April's going to roll along pretty good. The NBA playoffs are going to be starting up soon. And, of course, we got opening day on Thursday and the Masters this weekend, the draft later this month.
And don't forget, next week.
Next Saturday?
XFL.
Oh, yeah, the XFL. How could I forget the XFL?
That's easy.
I already did. Yeah. Yeah. What's next Saturday?
Well, is it XFL? No, USFL.
USFL.
Which
USFL.
One is it?
I don't know. See, you don't even know. See,
I don't even know.
Hey, Saturday.
Saturday.
Well, I can't remember something. It was football. Which league? I don't know.
Some spring football league that may last four
imagine
four
if
games.
I did that with my kids when they were little. Imagine if you did that with your kids now.
Yeah.
Okay, kids, guess where we're going Saturday? You'll never guess. Where? I can't. Right? We're not. Where are we going?
And then I go, Disneyland. Yes. They're like, yes.
No, sorry. Wait a minute. Hold on.
Disney Store.
No, we're going to the Strawberry Festival. Shoot. I get my things mixed up. Yeah, exactly. So can Tiger win the Masters? That's something we talked about in hour number one.
Yes. He's not playing if he can't win it.
Is it too basic? I don't know. Like, I try to stay away from the wishy-washy stuff in sports. You know what I mean? To me, I don't want to get sentimental all the time. There are some moments of sentimentality, but I don't want to get sentimental all the time. But I got to think when he hears, four, please, Tiger Woods, now driving on the first tee to go. I think that'd be fantastic. Like, I got to think that's pretty awesome, right? I just don't know if he can win. I just don't know. I mean, some golfers are playing really well. By the way, hey, do you know who Scottie Scheffler is? Have you heard of Scottie Scheffler?
No.
He's the new number one golfer in the world. It took him 42 days to win from winning his first golf tournament in his career, PGA Tour event in his career, to being the number one golfer in the world.
42 days?
That's it. It took Tiger over 200, just to give you some perspective. When Tiger won his first in 1996, he was still a very, very young
man. So this guy's going to win 30 majors.
So this guy, 25-year-old Texan, has won three of the last six events on the PGA Tour.
Now, is his rise
red hot?
Is his rise to number one because of him or because other players just couldn't keep up?
Good question. Now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I'd have to look it up, so I'm just going to take a guess. I think when Tiger was playing in 96, when he won his first tournament, I think the number one golfer in the world at that time was Greg Norman. And I think Greg Norman was pretty good, pretty solid in that spot. And so he wasn't going to take it over. You're right. I think the number one ranking has been topsy-turvy. It's Dustin Johnson. No, it's not. It was Jordan Spieth. No, it's not. It was Rory. No, it's not. It's, you know, it's gone up and down. So I think there was an opportunity. Brooks Koepka, nope, you know, that kind of thing. It could go back and forth. But I don't know. Like, when I think about – if I was picking this Masters and I was going to pick who I think is going to win, and I'm going to say it here on Wednesday, so mark it down at 33 past the hour on the second hour of the show, Tony D picks – I think Justin Thomas is going to win. That's who I got. I think Justin Thomas is going to win the Masters. Now, that means I've got to root for Justin Thomas because I would want it to obviously play out. And I don't know if I will. But I think Justin Thomas is going to win. I think he's getting better and better at that course. He's got the game for the course. I think he's going to be good. He's going to have Phil Mickelson's old caddy caddying for him. Bones. Remember Bones?
Bones.
Bones will be on the bag for Justin Thomas this week.
So, who hasn't won it?
Who hasn't
won
it?
I know a lot of people. I'm saying, like, the names that we all know.
Brooks Koepka's never won it.
Brooks Koepka.
Let's see. Bryson DeChambeau has yet to win the Masters.
That's right, because I remember he was going to be the big bomber, last year or 2 years ago and flamed out.
Remember that? Remember we were all like, oh, my God, it's going to be a par 60. Right? Remember that? The more I think about that, the more funny it is.
Yeah.
Because we were like, he's going to be able to hit sand wedge.
I mean, he was bombing it.
He was.
He just had no short game whatsoever.
None. Because he was trying to get out of trees and stuff. Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, there that one goes. Whoops. Looks like he lost that one to the right.
I mean, we all jumped on that wagon. I feel like he's just going to. Every par four is a par three
he's said that, too. Like, I remember him in a press conference saying that it was going to play as a par 67 for him.
Yeah. Now, has that died down?
I think so.
I mean, we all know that he's still going to hit it. He'll still probably, you know, the chances are he could drive a green on a par four. But we don't talk about it that much anymore.
He's got
because he hasn't really done anything with it.
He's got this weird thing, and I try not to be too cynical on stuff, but I do get that way a lot. Bryson DeChambeau said he suffered an injury playing ping pong. That he was playing ping pong at one of these tournaments, like in the Players Clubhouse, and that he slipped going for a shot, and that's messed up his hip and his shoulder or something like that. Like, he fell on his hip and shoulder. But I kind of think that's something you would go, yeah, I don't want to admit that maybe swinging 300 miles an hour is damaging my body. Like, I think that's something you would go, no, my swing is fine. My workouts are fine. My muscle build is fine. I slipped playing ping pong. That's why I hurt critical areas to the golf swing.
Unless I'm a professional, I'm never admitting a ping pong injury.
Oh,
ever.
I know, right?
I mean, if I'm a professional, sure, I'm, you know. Those guys who make it to the Olympics and, you know, that go on tournaments and stuff, I might say, yeah, I got a ping pong injury, but me? No.
No, never. Never. I'd rather, yeah, exactly. Well, that's the way Bryson DeChambeau's playing that. Like, he's playing Augusta, a par 67.
I'd rather say I tripped walking the dog.
Me too. Than admit a ping pong injury. You got it. Josh Alper next.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsmap Radio Network.
alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, let's go to the Progressive guest line. Talk some NFL with Josh Alper, ProFootballTalk.com. Progressive Insurance, making bundling home and auto easy. Learn more at Progressive.com. How are you, Josh?
I'm great. How are you?
Josh, what's the latest, or is there any information about where the investigation is or what Deshaun Watson will be going through in what the league is going to do in looking into these allegations?
You know, nothing new at this point. I think there's some question about exactly what the league would be waiting for at this point, if it's for him to settle these civil cases and sort of take it as far as you can and as close to the season as possible to make sure that you're not giving a suspension and then all of a sudden some other shoe drops that makes the league look like they've acted foolishly, which is something that obviously has happened in the past for the league. So I think that's some consideration, that until you're going to start with missing games, it's not a pressing matter. He'd be allowed to take part in practices and training camp while suspended. Anyway, so I think that may be playing a role. They've already said they're not going to put him on paid leave, which would be the only thing that would keep him from joining the Browns and working with the Browns. And I think the only other sideline is the way that they've structured this new deal with Cleveland. He's making basically the league minimum this year, and any suspension would come out of that. And, you know, I think the league would love to find a way to avoid making it look like they were punishing him in the least severe way possible in terms of the financial side. I just don't know that that will be possible.
What, outside of the possible suspension, I got to think there's got to be had to have been some rumblings amongst owners around the league as to what the Browns did for Deshaun Watson and the guaranteed and the contract. Has there been any rumblings of, oh my God, now this sets the bar at an incredible place?
Well, yeah, we've heard, definitely behind the scenes, but Ravens owner Steve Bisciotti, who obviously has Lamar Jackson on track for an extension, said this is going to make it harder for everyone. And, you know, you can imagine everybody in Cincinnati and with the Chargers nodding at that. I mean, if you're the Bengals and Joe Burrow's led your team to a Super Bowl in his second season, something Deshaun Watson's never done, and he's never embarrassed your franchise with his behavior off the field like Deshaun Watson has done, how can you then say, no, we're not going to give you a fully guaranteed contract when it's your time to come, when Deshaun Watson got one, or Justin Herbert, or any of the other quarterbacks that are going to be asking for new deals in the very near future? So, yeah, it did raise the bar for everyone, and I think they raised it on a player that I don't think anyone would say right now is to do it after a year where he didn't play a game and facing the kind of charges he faced. That's a situation that any team should have felt the pressure to give that kind of a deal in. I think that's the impression around the league, and it's going to have huge ramifications.
What's the situation with Baker Mayfield? Is anybody interested? Is there another time in the calendar where a move might be better made for Baker Mayfield? Where does he stand?
Well, I perhaps the draft, if a team like Seattle or Carolina. I mean, Seattle seems the most logical one just because right now Drew Lock's their starting quarterback, and Baker Mayfield is for all his foibles, a better quarterback than Drew Lock, for sure. They've talked about signing Geno Smith. I don't think that should change matters on that front. But, you know, maybe the draft, and if they have an eye on a young quarterback that they want to add, and they'd rather not have Baker Mayfield trying to salvage his career with a rookie learning and that kind of competition or that kind of atmosphere may not fit. But if it's not that, and it's not after the draft with a team that perhaps doesn't land the player they're looking for, I would say that it's going to be perhaps someone getting injured. I just don't know that the Panthers would see Baker Mayfield as an upgrade over Sam Darnold and a rookie, which I'm assuming the Panthers are bringing in a rookie. And other places, you know, the Falcons moved so quickly to sign Marcus Mariota. That's a pretty good sign that Baker Mayfield isn't a guy they're interested in for a year, and seeing how that happens. And you keep going down the list, Houston, and you're just running out of teams that need a quarterback.
Right. Let's get to what happened in Tampa Bay. And I know the media's had a lot of fun connecting the Brady unretirement to the Arians step down. But Was it surprising to you that Arians stepped down? Was there any sign that he would have be considering a move like this while the season was being going on?
Not while the season was going on, no. But once the Brady return rumbling started, that and there had been, you know, Rich Ornberger, who was a teammate of Brady's, had talked about some issues between them, and nothing that seemed like it was, you know, DEFCON 2 level, you know, some crazy level of problems between the two people, the two guys. But that there were some issues as the season played out last year. And then once Brady came back, it was something that you started to hear some whispering about, that Arians might be, you know, that this might be the time for Arians to step down as well. And I don't know that one is directly related to the other, but I think the fact that Tom Brady came back and is still back with Bruce Arians gone made it pretty clear that Bruce Arians wasn't something he was, you know, wasn't a deal breaker for him. And I don't know if Bruce Arians leaving was a deal breaker for him, but Bruce Arians being there certainly wasn't something that, you know, made Brady move one direction or the other, because he's just as happy being there without him.
Yeah, I find myself looking at the middle, because I don't think it was this Machiavellian thing that people are making it out to be on Brady's side. But I also don't think that the two are mutually exclusive. I think the answer is somewhere in the middle, because the division is there for Tampa to just take.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it's not like they're turning the reins over to some, you know, some greenhorn. Todd
right.
Bowles is an NFL, longtime NFL assistant and a past NFL head coach. The rest of that staff is in place. I do think there was some feeling last year that Arians was, I think figurehead is probably too strong a word, but, you know, driving around the practice in golf carts while Todd Bowles and Byron Leftwich and Harold Goodwin were the guys actually running the team. And if that's the case, then you might as well let those guys actually run the team and let Arians take on a role that has something to do with football in Tampa, but isn't, you know, he's not the head coach anymore. And he kind of was the head coach in name only to some people last season. So I think it's something that fits perfectly well with Brady. And obviously the, you know, the Bucs are in very good shape in that division, as you said.
All right, there was a trade that happened a few days ago that might have gone a little under the radar with the NCAA tournament and everything, but it was the Saints and the Eagles, and the Eagles are going to have 9 picks over 2 rounds in 2024, I believe, and then the Saints are going to have a number of picks. What was the thinking behind both teams in making this deal?
Well, from the Eagles side, you know, you had 3 first-round picks this year. You move one, and you get another one in 2023 and a second rounder in 2024. It really sets you up well to make a move for a quarterback if Jalen Hurts doesn't work out. And I think that's the thinking, is it creates this massive amount of flexibility moving forward in Philly for what you can do if you need a quarterback, or if Jalen Hurts is great this year. Look, we can stock this team around him, and what a window to win we have if Jalen Hurts works out. So I think you can go either way with that. New Orleans, you know, you've heard some people they're looking for players to round out a team that they think can make the playoffs, and I think that's a nice idea, but I don't know why you would make a trade like this at this point if that was your intent, because you're just asking other teams to jump in front of you if you think that, you know, the Saints are targeting players that you're targeting, if it's an offensive lineman or a receiver or an edge rusher. I think it's more likely that this gives them ammunition to take another jump up into the top 10 and get a premium player. I think a quarterback is possible. I don't think it's the only thing they could be looking at, but I would think they have an eye on 2-3 players in particular and want to have the chance to go and get them if that's the case, because I just frankly think that mortgaging the future the way that they did in terms of giving up future first, future second-round pick to add another first-round pick in a draft that nobody is particularly enthusiastic about would be a strange move otherwise.
All right, another move. Devontae Parker is going to New England, but because Tyreek Hill is in Miami. When you think about Tyreek Hill in Miami, Tua Tagovailoa at quarterback, How do you process that? How do you look at the way where the Dolphins, I know it's very early and there's still some acquisitions and some, you know, fine tuning, but how do you see the Dolphins in a heavy AFC?
Well, you know, I see them putting together an offense that looks like something Mike McDaniel was working with the 49ers. I think you have Mike Gesicki at tight end. Is a great weapon. Jaylen Waddle, Tyreek Hill, Cedric Wilson give you receivers that can line up at different spots, but they can line up in the slot. They can line up wide. You could put Tyreek Hill certainly in motion out of the backfield. We saw that in Kansas City. That's something we saw with Deebo Samuel in San Francisco, obviously. And I think you're looking at a team that's trying to diversify the offense in a way that it's not just about can Tua Tagovailoa stand in the pocket and deliver these kind of deep balls that have been the thing that have always been the question mark about him. If you have Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill and you can get them the ball in space, you don't need to throw the ball 40 yards downfield. You throw it 5 yards and you pick up the 40. And I think that's the operating principle there for Miami. And I think it's, you know, just another offense that is going to stress the hell out of defenses this year. And in the AFC, it feels like these defenses are going to be in for weekly just thrashings because of how deep all of these offenses are. You know, Buffalo, Miami, Kansas City, the Chargers, the Raiders, you know, the Broncos with Russell Wilson now. And you know, and that's not, you know, that's two divisions of the conference. So I think that's where it is. It's you need to be able to be explosive offensively. And Miami, every move Miami's made this offseason has been directed towards that. So I think that's where it fits. Whether Tua can still succeed and can thrive in that system, let's see. But I think that's the kind of offense he did well in Alabama.
Josh Alper, ProFootballTalk.com. Always good talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much, as always.
Have a good one.
And again, on a Progressive guest line, Josh Alper talking some NFL. Progressive Insurance. Bundle and protect today under one roof. Learn more at Progressive.com or call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Some thoughts on what he said coming up next as we continue on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Thanks to Josh Alper. I like having Josh on. I feel like I get to do more of a rapid, fiery type of interview with him.
Yeah.
Like we really bang, 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 go around the league. I was like that. Who else is like that? Russell Baxter, I think, is like that, too. Whenever we get him on.
Yeah.
It's like, boom, boom, boom.
Then there's, like, the long-form answer with, like,
Jason
Cole.
Yeah, then there's other
Cole.
Guys. Like, Jason Cole, like, we get more, like, big picture-ish
in
kind
depth.
Of things. In depth. But, you know, I didn't even get a chance to talk to Josh about the overtime rule. Does he like it? Does he hate it?
Well, let's get it back on.
We always... By the way, what are your thoughts on giving the opposing team the ball? I love the NFL, man. The NFL is great. They just... It's like they're... The NFL reminds me of like a tiger in the weeds, right? That are just hiding. And then they just look up and they go, oh, really? NCAA tournament? Pounce. Major League Baseball? Ugh. Like they just wait.
Yeah, you know
everybody is ready to make, like, oh, it's our time. And they go, nope.
You know where the NFL is headed, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Years ago, say, you know, I think we can go back maybe 15 years ago. Soccer, international soccer, and, you know, European leagues and all that stuff, they would have... sudden death, right? It was called golden goal.
Right.
So if a game was tied after 90 minutes, you go into regulation. First goal to score wins. Simple. Now, when you get to that stage, you play two 15-minute halves regardless. Ooh. I believe that where the NFL is headed is, hey, we're going to do a 10-minute overtime period regardless. And that's it.
I thought that was the best way.
I think we're heading
that
way.
I think that's the best way to do it in overtime. I don't know if you could get the players to do that during the regular season, but I think there's not very many opportunities. You're not asking, most teams aren't going to go into like 10 to 15 overtimes during the regular season.
No, but I'm saying
asking them to play 10 more minutes of football every now and then is awful.
Right.
So I think you're right. I think that because I made the point that at some point sudden death has to be okay, right? If this is what you're doing. So what I don't want is the slippery slope of, look, what we had was the Bills didn't get the ball. And everybody goes, oh, the Bills. And when Patrick Mahomes didn't get the ball a couple of years ago, right? It was, oh, it was a travesty. How dare they? I can't believe Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen couldn't get the ball. All right, but then at some point you got to go, yeah, but you know what? At some point, sudden death's got to kick in.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I know what everyone is really, it's they hate the fact that a game could be decided by a coin toss.
Right.
And that's where we're at. But that's why I'm saying if you can give, you say, full 10 minutes, it's hard to believe a team is going to control the ball for a full 10 minutes. I mean, it's happened. We've seen it done. But it's really hard for one team to control the ball the whole 10 minutes. And if they are to win it on a field goal after 10 minutes time and the other team didn't get a chance to get the ball, that's on you.
Oh, that's absolutely right. If a team gets the ball to open up a 10-minute overtime and they go on a 9-minute, 58-second drive, then that's too bad. Like I don't have any sympathy for you.
Yeah, you had a chance.
No chance. I mean, that's it. But I could.
But if it's still tied after 10 minutes, I don't know what the answer would be.
Maybe it is,
you know, continue on with the soccer analogy and go into field goal off.
At some point, sudden death is just going to have to be okay with everybody.
Yep.
That's just the way it's going to have to be. All right, hour three coming up as we continue. We'll look into the national championship game from Monday night as well. And again, continuing our look at the Masters, which starts tomorrow. It's Wake Up Call.